And now, a bit of romance.
Two girls on a quest to find which rom-com is the best. P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Hello, and welcome to P.S. I Love Rom-Coms, a podcast about spying a hottie across the dance floor, showing up soaking wet at your crush's front door, and road trips to the countryside galore. We're your hosts. I'm Mia.
And I'm Allie. P.S. I Love Rom-Coms is a rom-com review podcast where each week, Mia and I try to answer the question, which rom-com is the best rom-com of all time? And if we have to carry around little pieces of bacon in a plastic baggie in our pocket to try to tempt the answer to come to us, we will.
We like to start off each episode with a little segment called Which Rom-Com Hero or Heroine Are You Channeling? Where we equate the experiences we had this week with a famous rom-com hero or heroine. I can start us off this week. This week, I am channeling the character Rachel from the Netflix rom-com Like Father, starring Kristen Ooh. Bell and Kelsey Grammer. Yes. Yes. sort of like an unsung streaming rom-com.
But yeah.
I'm channeling Rachel because she's a woman who, like, her flaw is, like, she just, like, can't stop working, and she goes down the aisle and, like, hides her, like, cell phone in her dress, and then it rings for work, and then her fiance, like, leaves her because it's like, this is too much. And I've just been going through this period where I was, like, so tired and, like, was, like, not getting a lot done and didn't have a lot to do. And then now I've had this, like, giant burst of energy, and I have just gone crazy with it. And just, like, every day is, like, a jam-packed scheduled thing. And I'm just, like, slowly going unhinged. I do think, and it's like the poster is, like, her and Kelsey Grammer, like, in a kayak. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I feel like I need now. I didn't have any energy. I got it back. And then I was, like, went crazy. And now I'm like, yeah, now I want to be in, like, a kayak with my estranged father. Just, like, chilling. So that's who I'm channeling this week. Allie, who are you channeling?
First of all, now I really want to watch that rom-com. That sounds great. I can't believe I haven't. Yeah. I think I, like, vaguely have heard of it before. And I was like, oh, Kristen Bell, Kelsey Grammer, two of my favorite comedic actors. I gotta see it. And it just whizzed by me, as movies do sometimes. And
I know. Well, it's also 2018 streaming, so I feel like it's right before we started taking streaming seriously for rom-coms. You know, it's just kind of in that.
Yeah, I feel like we started taking streaming rom-coms more seriously in 2020, right? Like, during the pandemic, when it was like, we can't go to movie theaters. Streaming is now, you know, our new movie theater.
Totally. You're right, because it completely elevated it. Mm-hmm. And then I remember, like, the precursors. I was like, okay, yeah, Set It Up I took seriously. But it was still kind of, like, a little bit more of unknown actors. And then Someone Great was the first time. And this was also, like, it was still before we took it super seriously. Someone Great was the first time where I was like, oh, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Like, something's shifting. Yeah, so this probably just got lost in that kerfuffle.
You're so right. Set It Up was one of the first ones I watched where I was like, okay, I'm into it.
Streaming comes showing up with rom-coms.
You get it. But yeah, great channel. I think this week, oh man, I think that I'm channeling Jennifer Goodwin's character, Gigi, in one of my favorite rom-coms, He's Just Not That Into You. Have we done this one yet?
Oh my God. I don't think we have.
We have to do it. It's so good. It's one of my favorites. And, you know, God bless Gigi. Gigi, you know, is always putting her heart out there, and she's not great at reading the signs. And this past week, you know, Mia knows because I texted her a lot about it. I asked someone out and I got rejected. And, you know, I think, like, Allie maybe, like, 3 years ago would have been, like, truly devastated by this and, like, would have been, you know, unconsolable. But I think at this point, I've been dating for so long and shooting my shots and getting rejected. This isn't my first time it's happened. Then I'm kind of like, yeah, that's fine. I put my heart out there. You know, it's better than just not trying, which is what Gigi's all about and what I'm all about. And so,
hell yeah.
Yeah. So I put my heart out there, got rejected. That's okay, because, you know, tomorrow's another week, and I'm, you know, I'll just go back on that old Hinge, that old Tindy, and try again. So,
yeah, no, this is, and I think this is like next level dating. It's like, you know, we are a shoot your shot philosophy podcast. Yeah. Like, absolutely. And now we're living it. And oh my gosh, Ellie, did I shoot my shot several times a few months ago just know and over again? And nothing is like more humbling and interesting than that experience.
It's so humbling. It's so interesting because I'm like, I feel like I have a lot to offer. I feel like I'm pretty good about myself. I feel like cute. And I'm like, I feel like people, I would say yes if I asked me out.
Oh, absolutely. I would too. Allie and I famously met, Hinge recommended that we meet.
We haven't talked about this yet. Me and I did find each other on Hinge. I have to say, Mia has an incredible profile.
Oh my God, stop. Allie has funny, an incredible
it's
profile.
It's fresh, you know. I think what we're just trying to say is date us.
Date us. exactly. That is an incredible channel. I love Gigi for you.
Thank you.
You're a fucking badass. And any person would be lucky to date you, Allie.
Thank you. Speaking of, you know, thinking your life is going one way and then having the rug kind of pulled out from under you, let's get into our movie discussion, shall we? This week, we watched the 1997 rom-com As Good As It Gets. In this film, Melvin Udall, played by Jack Nicholson, is an obsessive-compulsive writer of romantic fiction who is rude to everyone he meets, including his neighbor Simon, played by Greg Kinnear. But when he has to look after Simon's dog after Simon is assaulted, Melvin begins to soften and finds that he can also begin to conduct a relationship with the only waitress at a local diner who will serve him, played by Helen Hunt.
Mm. As Good As It Gets was directed by James L. Brooks, who also directed Broadcast News and Spanglish, and was written by James L. Brooks and Marcus Andrus. Nicholson and Hunt won the Academy Awards for Best Actor and Best Actress, respectively, making As Good As It Gets the most recent film to win both the Lead Acting Awards and the first since 1991's Silence of the Lambs.
Wow.
It was also crazy.
And a
rom-com. That's crazy. It was also nominated for Best Picture, but ultimately lost to Titanic. And fun fact, at the 1998 Oscars ceremony, when Jack Nicholson won for Best Actor, he gave a little nod to his character of Melvin Udall by carefully stepping over the cracks between the tiles on the stage. And terrible fact, in the movie, Melvin's response to the question about how he writes women so well, "I think of a man and then take away reason and accountability," was an actual response given by author John Updike when asked the same question.
Isn't that horrible?
That is so upsetting. The idea that at the that John Updike would have said that it even made sense that men had more accountability than women is insane. I am like, oh my God, men, this is your world. We were just living in it. What are you talking about?
That's so crazy. And that's like John Updike, a supposedly like respected author and thinker of,
I take away reason and accountability. That is like, wow, that is wild.
That's like Mark Twain sexist. And like,
exactly.
John Updike was around like what, during the 90s and stuff? And it's like, geez.
It's sometimes when we take a little step back and like in time for what's permissible and in just like not that long ago, it's so upsetting.
Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about John Updike. We're here to talk about Melvin Udall and As Good As It Gets. And Allie, now if you've been following along, we famously had an amazing kerfuffle where it turns out something's got to give, and As Good As It Gets both star Jack Nicholson and are extremely difficult to separate in our brains. But here we are talking about As Good As It Gets today. Allie, when did you first see As Good As It Gets, and what's your relationship like with this film?
Oh, man. I've seen this movie a bunch of times. I first saw it, I think, when I was just like a teenager, and saw it with my parents. A lot of it like kind of went over my head. Some of those monologues that Jack Nicholson gives are like really fast and like really crazy, rude, and just like all over the place. And a lot of them kind of went over my head, and a lot of the themes were a little bit too adult for me. And then later in college, I rewatched it. And then I'd say I've watched it since college, like two or three times. I just love Helen Hunt so goddamn much.
Oh my gosh, that it's fantastic. Like,
I watch this movie any chance I get. And I think like this last time watching it, something that like hit me that hasn't hit me in previous times is just like, I just like really, in the past I was like, how could Helen Hunt ever, you know, be with a character like Jack Nicholson, right? That's kind of the whole premise of the movie. Could this woman ever find this man lovable at all or attractive at all? And I have to say, as I get older and more tired, having somebody help you with your life and do things to help you out. And, you know, Melvin helps out, you know, Greg Kinnear's character,
Simon,
when he's at his worst, and like when Helen's like just up against the ropes, Melvin also helps her. And it's like, okay, as I get older, I'm like, it's not as crazy, even though he's older and, you know, is dealing with some of his own issues. I'm like, I get it. Now that I'm a little bit older, I would love someone to, you know, help me out with my really expensive bills. And I'd like, you know,
oh my God, someone to demystify the healthcare system.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Someone to help me with my taxes right now, because
help us with our taxes, please. God,
I'm doing the write-offs right now and they're just killing me.
I dreamt about it last night. I literally had a nightmare about it last night. I had a nightmare. My accountant was trying to harm me last night. I know.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
My accountant's
My
accountant's a really nice person. I don't know why I dreamt that. But I digress.
That's me. What about you, Mia? Is this the first time you've seen it?
Oh my God, I have never seen this movie before. This was my first time seeing it. I know. And I was shocked because I've heard so many good things about it over the years. And like, people are obsessed with this film. And I was like, oh, can't wait to watch it, you know. And we just watched Something It's Gotta Give, which is a Jack Nicholson film from just 5 years later, I think. So I was like, oh my gosh, can't wait to just like, you know, dive into it. And it's a Nancy Meyers rom-com. So it's like, and because since Something's Gotta Give is Nancy Meyers rom-com, it's like such a warm bubble bath. I was like, oh, I can't wait to just like snuggle up for another Jack Nicholson rom-com. And then in the first scene, he throws a dog down a garbage chute. And I was like, oh my fucking God, like, what is this movie? And it's a really cute dog. And then immediately, like, I was like shocked because I also don't know anything about this movie. Like, I know I've like vaguely been like, yeah, I think there's something about like Helen Hunt and Jack Nicholson's characters having like different socioeconomic statuses. Like I that was kind of like the only specific I feel like I had like gleaned over my life. And then watching it, and then just like the first 10 minutes, like Jack Nicholson's characters just does like the most like unforgivable, horrible things. I was like, what kind of rom-com? Because he puts the dog in the garbage chute. He said he is like incredibly racist and then is incredibly homophobic, like all in like one breath. And I've just like, you know, this is a genre that is so specific and so consistent and so, loves to keep it tonally pretty, pretty neutral, pretty mm-hmm. like not divisive. And I was like, oh my God, this is a divisive rom-com, which makes sense that it's James L. Brooks, because it is also like broadcast news in that it departs from the classic rom-com structure and tropes in many ways.
Yeah.
So it was such a fascinating watch for me. I was like, what is happening? And then over the film, it did start to like present itself that it's being like, oh, like what would it take to love someone like this? Like, what would it take to bring love to someone like this? And like, that was very compelling and interesting. I read a Roger Ebert review of it at the time that was being like, oh, if anyone else besides Jack Nicholson was saying this stuff, it would be hard to like stomach. And I was kind of like, oh yeah, I don't know if culturally we all have the same relationship to him right now as popular culture did back then. Cause I was like, it was not easy, but I also didn't watch it in its context. So I'm like, now out of its context, I'm like, I don't know. It sounds like horrible coming. Like maybe it's like, if it would like, maybe like the comparison would be like, oh, if you had like Will Ferrell playing a horrible person, or like someone who like we all just like know is very like good.
Tom Hanks kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly.
Like, cause Jack Nicholson is like a little Oscar machine, it feels like. And
right.
He's just so good. First of all, he's a great actor, but he's also really good at picking parts. And he's just like a little Oscar machine. And he's like someone that people feel like they know and like love and can trust. And so that is a good point. Yes. The fact that they like cast him in it, you know, at that time where I think he was hitting a career peak.
Right, where it was like, oh, he can do this. He can play this very, very unlovable, very offensive character.
Yeah.
So I think watching it out of its time and context is like probably more shocking than it was back then. Mm-hmm. For that reason, just because it's like I love Jack Nicholson, but I do think of him as kind of just like a bit of like an older like Lothario type, some sort of like, it was so shocking to see, but it was such an interesting and dynamic rom-com, and it surprised me, and it was just like a huge I feel like it is like a huge departure from the classic structure and what I expect in a rom-com. So it was really cool to see a movie like this from the 90s. And then one that had won both top acting prizes at the Oscars. It was really cool. Yeah. Again, like, yeah, James L. Brooks really does respect the genre. And I love seeing people try really hard within the genre.
Yeah. And something that's really cool and different and unique about this rom-com, because this came out before Silver Linings Playbook, but it is a rom-com that deals with like mental illness as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think they say that he has OCD in it, or yeah, at least it's what it's
hinted at.
Yeah, when
he goes to the therapist.
The therapist, he's. And so like, you know, he's like, when you're introduced to his character, like, you see him like opening and like closing, you see him closing his door and like locking and unlocking his locks like multiple times. And you see him like washing his hands with like 3 bars of soap with really, really hot water and like throwing the soap away. And you also hear him say these like really incredibly like rude things. And it's usually like, I know that a symptom of OCD is like, if you're like, patterns or behaviors are like interrupted, it can cause you to like lash out in anger, and it causes you to be more irritable. And so it's when he has these like kind of like rude monologues that he says to people where he really just breaks people down through their core. He literally, the acting is so great. He has these monologues where he just like tears people apart and you just see them be crushed.
God, they're so intense.
They're so intense. And I think part of that is a symptom of his OCD, but
you're so right.
But not to excuse what he says, because what this movie's all about is like, you know, it's okay that you have, you know, a mental illness, but you also have to like, part of it is like, take care of yourself. And like halfway through the movie, he realizes that if he wants to have a normal life, like if Melvin wants to have people have relationships and stuff, that he has to take care of himself and start taking pills again. And
yeah,
there's a like this line that really hit me this time that I watched it that hasn't hit me before, which is like, Melvin, Jack Nicholson's character and Helen Hunt's character, are like on a date at a crab restaurant that has soft shell crab or hard shell crab or something and like that.
Did that just make me remember the 90s? Oh so my gosh. I was so like, this is such a 90s restaurant. I miss it.
But there is such a 90s restaurant. But there was this scene where he's like, she's like, you've just said something really mean to me. And he didn't realize he said something mean. And she's like, I need you to give me a compliment right now. And the compliment he says is, after like we hung out, I started taking my pills again. And I wanted to become a better man for you and become my best self. And it was like very beautiful. Yeah. And, you know, it's not an Melvin's not an easy character to like, but he does change in the movie and he tries to become better. And I think that's like what makes a good movie is a character that you start off, you know, hating because he throws a dog down a garbage chute. And then by the end of it, you're like, he's changing and he's trying and a little bit of me likes him.
Yeah. That's such a good point, Allie. Like several things you said resonated with me. One about it being a movie about mental health as well. Cause it's like, yeah, I didn't quite, it's like, you don't catch on for a while that, yeah, you're right. Like a lot of his like worst tirades are when his pattern has been interrupted. So it's like the dog goes down the chute. Yeah. Cause his pattern's been interrupted. His like outburst at Greg Kinnear when he like knocks and interrupts him, Helen Hunt, yeah, not being at work. It is, yeah, it is so interesting and so unlike so many rom-coms that we have seen to have the hero. I mean, sometimes the hero is an asshole, but not like this. And when this was all set up, I was like, oh my God, like I'm whatever they're gonna do, there's like no way I'm gonna like this man. I was like, there's just no way I'm ever gonna like this man. And I was so upset. And I was just like, wow, the dog thing really works. Like watching him like learning to love a dog. And it's like, as someone who has a dog and loves a dog, I was like, I can't believe that this alone has worked on me to warm me to the character of Melvin.
It's the dog is such a powerful tool. One of my favorite moments with the dog too is when he's walking the dog and Melvin steps over the crack and then the dog also steps over the crack like in love. And he's like, oh my God, like this is what happens. Like when you love someone, you can like influence them. And like it's just so beautiful. And I saw this fun fact that to film that, what they did is they like put an object on the sidewalk and then they like erased it out later. Cause I was like, do they train the dog to do that? Cause it's so, so impressive.
Yeah. I want that trainer's number. That is, yeah, it is so, I hate how easily it worked on me. It just didn't, it did endear me to Melvin. And I love when, like the dog Verdell, I believe, starts to prefer Melvin over Simon, Greg Kinnear's character. And then when Simon's super down, Melvin tries to get Verdell to like, he's like, no, he only likes me better because I keep bacon in my pocket. He tries to get him to go to Greg Kinnear and he won't. And I can't believe how much that worked on me. It was very sweet. I feel like a sap. But yes, that worked. And then of course, well, you know what, offering to pay for and handle someone's child's just debilitating medical bills and mysteries is, yeah, that's definitely a save the cat moment for your horrible character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. I was also thinking about Save the Cat, where it's like, and for listeners who don't know, Save the Cat is like a screenwriting term where if you have a character that's like unlikable, you have them do this one thing, AKA saving a cat, you know, from getting hit by a car. So we just like them, even if they're not a great person, we'll like them if they save a cat, kind of a thing. And what's so crazy is at the beginning of this movie, in the moment where you think it would be the save the cat moment, like right at the beginning where you see the little dog, we see him literally like throw away a dog instead of save a cat. And I thought that that was kind of funny. And
yeah, that is, yeah, it is nice that it does. It's like so many stories do come down to like that core element of like, oh, if you can show like an unlovable character caring for something smaller and defenseless, it really does a lot. So it is such a great reverse that the inverse of that is being, yeah. I mean, that they really used it on both ways here. It made me feel stuff on both sides. And then, oh my God. Okay. The central romance of the film, which I was so surprised by. I was like, this is not going romantic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I do believe was also not originally the intention, that it wasn't originally supposed to be a rom-com, but that I
really?
Think I saw, yeah, I saw a quote by Helen Hunt that was like, it came together in the footage. Oh, yeah, this was it. This is what I read. I read that it came together in the footage as they were shooting. So it's like they changed it while they were shooting. Like they were looking at the dailies and then being like, oh my God, this is a rom-com.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. So then they like adjusted for it, which I think makes sense because it's like I was equally like, wait a minute, what? Because when she was like, I will never, ever sleep with you, I'm like, yeah, of course you won't. You know, I'm like, yeah, you're not going to do that.
Oh, see, when she said that, that line of I will never, ever sleep with you is the same as I will never fall in love with you. Or
yeah,
like, I promise that this thing will never, ever happen. And it's
exactly.
Always like, okay, well, now we know it's going to happen.
Yeah, I know. And you were correct. And because I had like no context for the movie, I was like, sure, this isn't what the movie's about. Okay. And then I was like, oh, no, it is.
Also, that scene where she's like running in the rain to go like,
oh my gosh,
thank him for what he's done. And like her shirt is see-through. It's like, okay. This is a
rom-com. You're right. Yeah. Definitely when she's like hiding her nipples, you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, this is a rom-com.
And then it's like, oh, we're going to take a weekend trip to the countryside. It's like, okay. And then mix CDs. Oh my God.
It's like that was again a very endearing moment to a very horrible character when it's like, what was it? Like icebreaker music to pep things up.
Yeah. So in this like convertible that they're driving to try to help out Greg Kinnear's character, Simon, Melvin has put together a bunch of music tapes for them to listen to on the road trip. And I'm trying to see how many I could remember. One was like Icebreakers. One was like If We're Feeling Good. And one was just labeled, it was all like situation based. It's like, oh, if there's like an awkward silence, play this kind of a thing. And there was one that was just labeled Billie Holiday. And I thought that was so great.
Oh my God. that was such a funny touch. I do think is definitely what sets this movie apart too, is it's so specific. It is one of the most specific rom-coms I've ever seen. It's like you have Jack Nicholson, who is like the most horrible character maybe ever in a rom-com. Just, you know, like the most unlikable rom-com character I think I've ever seen. You have Greg Kinnear, who is playing a gay painter in the 90s, which he has a very dimensional role in this film.
Yeah.
Which is unusual for the time.
Really unusual.
And a lot. Yeah. Yeah. And so much time and space in the film just for his character as well.
Yeah.
Like it's very shared between the three of them. And then Helen Hunt, who also plays a really unusual character. The character's supposed to be in her 40s. Helen Hunt's in her 30s, but the character is like a single mother in her 40s with a sick son, like trying to date, but trying to survive. And it was all just so unusual and so, so specific.
Yeah.
And that I really liked because it's, you know, you just don't see you don't see that often.
Yeah. And what was so cool too, was it almost seemed like the movie was not like, it was a rom-com, but it wasn't like just between Jack Nicholson and Helen Hunt. It was also between like, Helen Hunt's character's name is Carol. It was also like between Carol and Simon and like their relationship, yeah, and like how Simon made Carol feel beautiful again. And like, she hasn't felt beautiful and free in so long because she's been so busy taking care of her sick son. And also how like Simon and Melvin get along. There's this, oh, I think this is my favorite scene in the movie where it's like 3 a.m. Melvin is awake. He goes over to Simon, his neighbor's house. Simon has just been robbed, has no money, you know, has nothing left going for him. He knocks on the door. He's like, oh, Melvin's like, I thought you'd still be up, Simon. He's like, you're right. And Melvin, literally the most selfish character in the world, goes, I brought you some, I think like noodle soup or some like, you know, like egg drop soup or something. And Simon's like, thank you, that's so nice. And then they sit down to talk, and the conversation they have is like, Melvin starts off and he's like, I feel awful. Like, I wish I was dead. Every waking moment is full of anxiety and nausea. And then Simon kind of pipes in and goes like, I know what you mean. I feel like a zombie. Colors are gone. I just have no will to live. And then Melvin goes, yeah, I just really am struggling. And then he goes, well, thanks for that. And then he leaves. And it's just, that's the whole conversation, is them just like, just kind of spiraling together. And that's what friendship is sometimes. It's just like witnessing each other's lives. And your really good friends are there to witness your life and be there by your side, whether it's good or bad. And it was such a beautiful moment. And it's like the movie, while not like your traditional love triangle, was like a really lovely, healthy love triangle where like they were all giving each other something that they needed. Like, these are three people that are all kind of alone, and they all find each other and are like a support system for each other. And it's really cool and different and unusual.
Totally. No, I feel the same way. It was having it be like a story about three people in between friendship and romantic relationship was super interesting. And then one of my favorite scenes was this is like the ending of this movie is like so wild and so funny and so unique. Where Jack Nicholson goes over to Helen Hunt's apartment and they have this argument where she's at the top of the stairs and she's just yelling, why can't I, what does she say? Like, why can't I have a normal boyfriend who doesn't like freak out on me or something?
Yeah.
And then her mom pops out and is like, everybody wants that, dear. It's not real. Which I don't know. I don't know how much I agree with that philosophy, but it's a funny scene. And then they go on this like unhinged walk through the city where they like continue to like keep almost breaking up and then decide to be together and then get like hot rolls. Mm-hmm. And it was really cute and strange. And I was just like, wow, I've just never seen an ending like this to a rom-com.
Yeah. And I do love, it's like, I mean, like there are relationships that are like that. I think both you and I, and tell me if I'm out of turn here, maybe like are looking for relationships that don't have as much confrontation as that. I think some people really, you know, like that. I think that kind of like always fighting kind of dynamic really works for some people. And so in that aspect, it's like, oh, that's kind of, you know, that fun kind of like old fashioned, like, you know, opposites that clash and that kind of like are attracted to, you know, all the debates that they get into. And, and so it's a fun dynamic, not one that I'm looking for, but
no, neither, neither, and neither for me. No, I'm always like, well, I don't know. Like, that's how you feel. I guess that's how you feel, man. But yeah, but very fun to watch. Very fun to observe.
Fun to watch, and, yeah.
And I do get it.
And yeah, I do love the ending where it's like, they go and get hot rolls. something that's really fun about this rom-com is that Jack Nicholson's character, Melvin, is a incredibly like prolific and beloved romance novel writer.
Yeah.
Like, and it's so interesting because like he gets a lot of like, I mean, he gets a lot of favors and stuff and a lot of help because he's like very famous. And it's so interesting too, that the main character who like writes about love really knows like nothing about it in reality is, I think, thought like a really fun kind of like irony.
Yeah. Yeah. To have this man be like so horrible, to have him like hate women, like, or seemingly the way he speaks about them, hate women. And then that woman's like, how did you like get in here? And like, it's, yeah, it was a very funny element. Oh, also, did you notice that,
young Maya Rudolph?
Yes. Yes. Exactly what I was going to say, that there's a young Maya Rudolph who very briefly plays a police officer.
Yeah.
Wow, what a treat. What a treat.
What a treat. She's a baby there. Oh my gosh.
So young. I'm like, so she's been working forever.
Yeah. Something we haven't talked about as much is like Greg Kinnear's character, Simon, who
yes.
Was a really interesting character. Like, he has this really, I mean, it's this movie gets like very dark.
Yeah.
At times, and especially he has like a model come over. He's a painter and he paints portraits of people, and he had like this model come over who was kind of like seedy, and like the model ended up like bringing his friends over and like robbing Simon and then really like beating him up very, very badly. And in that moment, like when he is at his lowest, the saddest part is just like his friends show up for him a little bit, but over time they just kind of, when he needs money and stuff and needs support and he has no money left, they all just kind of leave him.
Yeah.
And even his own family, his parents, like leave him too. And it's really sad. And where am I going with this?
I got you.
Just that Melvin, you know, it's another save the cat where it's like, save your neighbor who's down on his luck kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Greg Kinnear is so good in it and is such a good actor.
Yeah. It's such a different character. Like, it's just, you just don't see stuff this dark in rom-coms normally. Even the way he was like beat up was so upsetting. Like, just like straight up violence in a rom-com is unusual. Yeah. That's not like comedic slapstick. And it was definitely effective in like, you know, getting the audience to like Melvin, who is so horrible. Who does such horrible things. It was very effective and moving and interesting. And to see the friendship develop with Helen Hunt as well was like such a treat.
And what's so cool, and now I'm just realizing this, and now I kind of want to watch Spanglish. Both Broadcast News and As Good As It Gets they both have two kind of like love triangles. It's both about like a relationship that like three people have to each other, just kind of interesting. And each person is very, very different.
I do think Spanglish maybe has a little bit of that.
I've never seen it. I saw it in Adam Sandler. Is that right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, I think it's with Adam Sandler. Let's see here. Taya Leone and Paz Vega. It looks like. I saw it in theaters. So this was a long time ago. And I didn't love it, but I was also younger and it wasn't like a classic rom-com because it's, yeah, because it's James L. Brooks. So of course it's not a classic rom-com.
Yeah.
Worth a watch. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we'll watch it. We'll, and see. But I do think there is, potentially something similar in there as well.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Two more things that I want to mention before I'm ready to count some tropes.
yes.
The first is I just want to do a shout out to Harold Ramis, who,
oh my God,
is so incredible. He plays the doctor in it, and it, there is just something about him that is so comforting. And I know that's like his role that he was like supposed to be playing, but God, he's so incredible.
He's so grounded. I was like, kept being like, is that Harold Ramis? Because he was just such a grounded doctor, just there to help.
Yeah, God, he's so incredible. It made me want to
fantastic
rewatch Ghostbusters.
Same.
And then the second is I wanted to talk about the therapist scene. There's a therapist scene in this movie, like there are in a lot of rom-coms, but this one was a little bit different. Like Melvin runs back to his old therapist, and this is just like really interesting writing, literally an interesting line that James L. Brooks wrote that I wanted to shout out because I think it does a really good job kind of like showing Melvin's character. And this is just like a screenwriting shout out where like Melvin goes to the office and he talks about like how the doctor has rearranged the furniture in his office. And then his therapist points out like, well, isn't it interesting that you noticed that I've rearranged the furniture, but you haven't noticed the fact that I've grown a beard. And he's like, it's because you notice the furniture because it's affecting your pattern. And you're only ever concerned about your pattern and your pattern being effective. And it's like, wow, that's such a great way to highlight it, where it's like he's only concerned about, what affects him in his patterns, and he doesn't even notice, that the therapist has a beard now. And I was like, wow, that's so, what a great way to like show what it's like, what like Melvin's mental state is like and how he thinks and, his mode of thinking.
Yeah. And how a character like that comes to be. Yeah. Having a lot. Yeah. It is such like a deep dive into his character and what he deals with his mental health. And it's really interesting. And you just really don't see that in rom-coms often.
Yeah. And then the last thing I want to say about that scene is it's so good. Maybe this is my favorite part. He leaves the scene and Melvin walks into the therapist's office and there are just like a bunch of people waiting to, go to counseling and go to therapy. And everyone kind of looks a little bit like you do in a therapist's office, kind of just like tired and stressed, anxious. And he looks at all these people and he just says, "What if this is as good as it gets?" And it's just like, the title of the movie, which I love. I love when the character says the title of the movie. We love to hear
the title of the movie in a rom-com.
And two is just like, oh my God. I just, if someone said that to me in my therapist's office, even right now, as I sit in my kitchen, if someone came in and was like, what if this is as good as it gets? I would just be like, my greatest fear. This is your peak. This is your peak right now.
Is the most painful and relatable question.
Yeah.
And really is like a very beautiful reflection on the film that like all of the characters have these huge obstacles that they struggle with, but through connection to each other, it all becomes much more manageable and
much better. That's
really beautiful.
That's such a good point. Yeah. Like they're each kind of in this kind of like stagnant place where they have real struggles in their lives and real obstacles in their lives. Carol with her sick son, Melvin with his mental illness, Simon with his, you know, recent poverty. But like, it's their friendship that helps them get out of those places and makes their life better. And that their life isn't just, this isn't just as good as it gets. It gets better.
It gets better. Yeah. So that's, it's really beautiful. It is. It's a, it makes me really happy. Okay. Well, on that note, should we count up some of the familiar tropes we spotted?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, I got, here's what I spotted. I spotted enemies to lovers. So they start off pretty enemigos all around, and then they all end up kind of lovers and friends. One of our leads works in print media. He is a romance writer. Mm-hmm. We have lots of grand gestures, but definitely the grand gesture of offering to pay for her son's medical bills. Mm-hmm. We have a huge age difference between the male and female lead. We have a nice 30-year age gap between the actors. There's a 30-year age gap between the characters because, and it's supposed to be a nice 20, a cool 20, but, Helen Hunt, they just end up casting someone who's like 10 years younger than, which is why when her mother came out during that convo, I was like, this is so upsetting because the mother is still more age appropriate yet younger than Jack Nicholson. But yeah, so we got a nice little 30-year age gap in there. Classic.
That being said, I know why Helen Hunt would take the role because, you know, I read something somewhere that like the last couple of films that I think another film Jack Nicholson was in. I don't know, but like if you're in a film with Jack Nicholson and you act opposite him, there's a chance that you could get nominated for an Oscar. Like he's just an Oscar magnet.
And that's exactly what happened. And it is a really interesting role. Having like the, like when she is like, you never talk about my son, like that seems really interesting. Definitely a meaty role. So yes. And then I wrote down Crosstown Chase. He like leaves his apartment in the middle of the night to go over to hers.
Yeah, he does.
We've got the big speech. That probably happens then, right? I don't really remember why I wrote that, but I think it is the like.
Yeah,
he gives a
big. Yeah, gives a big speech on her front steps. There are kind of like a couple big speeches, but that's kind of the main one. He's like on her
more
steps.
Trippy one. Yeah. Yes, and then finally, which you already mentioned, Allie, I did have. We say the title in the film. We say as good as it is. It's as good as it gets. So that's what I had, Allie. What did you have?
I have. I said bad date montage. It wasn't a montage, but they show Carol going on a really bad date with that guy who comes over to her apartment, and then she gets throw up on him, and he's real. He goes, "It's a little too real for me for a Friday night," or something like that. And it's also good screenwriting too, because if you're like, "Oh my gosh, why would Carol ever be with?" You know, Melvin.
Yeah.
But if you show her on bad dates, it's like, okay, that's good kind of setup.
Totally.
Being like comparison to this like young hotshot who thinks he's too good for a, you know, older woman with a sick son. You can see why Carol's like, I'd take Melvin. Okay. I have a cute dog that makes funny facial expressions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Verdell.
I have stalking is romantic. You know, I mean, both Carol and Melvin show up at each other's door kind of like in the middle of the night. Which I would be like, I would hate if someone showed up at my door in the middle of the night. I'd be like, please.
Yeah, let's emergency. Don't do that.
Give me a little notice. I'd like to be ready.
Same.
But they both kind of do that. Melvin really does it because he like finds out where she lives so he can say, come to work so you can feed me my bacon and eggs. I have... showing up on someone's doorstep, soaking wet, covered in rain. I feel like that's in other, I know that's in Four Weddings and a Funeral. I mean, that's in a lot of rom-coms. It's in It's in a, I think The Wedding Planner, somebody shows up covered in rain.
Yes.
I think Matthew McConaughey is like at J-Lo's door and he's covered in rain.
Yeah, just a classic rom-com staple we love.
I Have New York is a magical city just because there's this one moment where, okay, first it's a magical city because at 4 a.m. you can get hot rolls and you see this bakery and it's just like the coziest little bakery you've ever seen. And then there's another moment where Carol is renting her sick son to a cab because they need to get him to a hospital. And
oh, yeah.
And
sorry, I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at what's back.
Mia's laughing at what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
She doesn't think it's funny when
I don't think that's funny, but what happens after is funny.
Yeah. And Carol sees Melvin getting into a cab and she needs that cab. So she goes, wait, Melvin, wait. And then she's running through a group of schoolgirls and all the schoolgirls yell, wait, Melvin, wait. And it's so funny.
It's really funny. It makes New York look like an unruly magical place. Yeah.
Where it's like they're just cute little schoolgirls that are good at making jokes. Okay, so I have that. I have seen your crush across the dance floor. Melvin goes to a crab restaurant with Carol and he sees Carol from across the dance floor. She's drinking a Cosmo, looking incredible.
Yes.
I have the I'm never going to sleep with you line. I'm never, ever going to sleep with you.
I will never fall in love with you.
Never, ever. You said that they say the title. Oh, they take a countryside trip. They like take a little mini vacation and go to the countryside. But because it's James L. Brooks, they're going to the countryside to get money for Simon, who had all of his money stolen.
Oh my gosh.
And then I think that's it. I think that's it's you cross the dance floor. Yeah, I think that's it.
It's so much higher than I thought. That takes us to 17 tropes, which I'm kind of surprised by. Yeah, it really did end up being a rom-com. That's crazy. Yeah, I'm shocked, but it makes sense because it is. It's just an unconventional one.
Yeah.
Well, now I think it's time to rate this rom-com. We here at PSA Love Rom-Coms have an ever-changing list of top 5 rom-coms. And as of now, our top 5 are The Best Man, When Harry Met Sally, Love and Basketball, The Wedding Singer, and 10 Things I Hate About You. So now, if we so choose today, we can put As Good As It Gets on that list, but we all have to unanimously agree to vote one of the other off the top 5 to replace it with. So what do we think? Does As Good As It Gets deserve a spot on the top 5 list? And if so, who should it knock off?
Did Broadcast News get an Oscar? I know this is crazy. That's a crazy thought to say. I said that because I feel like if a James L. Brooks rom-com was going to be on this list, I think I would put Broadcast News before I would put.
Wait, Allie. Oh my God. Okay. It was nominated for a bunch of stuff. I thought it like won and I was like, oh my God. But no, it looks like it. No. It just was nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Actor, Best Writing. Yeah. But no, just nominated. But yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, same. If I wanted to put a James L. Brooks vehicle, I also would. Did you say you would prefer Broadcast News?
I would prefer Broadcast News. I think it's, I mean, this definitely is innovative. Having a just literally the most unlikable lead of all time is very, you know, it's brave. And it's like an interesting experiment. Only a great writer and a great actor could pull this story off. And they did. They did a great job with it. But I just, you know, this movie's more realistic than it is romantic. And there's something to be said for like realistic romance. It is what makes this movie special and beautiful is like the romance kind of between the three, you know, main leads is, you know, both romance and friendship is really beautiful. And the actors do an incredible job. The storytelling is so good, but it's not like, you know, it's not like nobody puts baby in the corner. You know, there's no like big lift. There's no big, big romantic kiss. There are kisses in it. They're kind of awkward and kind of funny and weird, but and more realistic to real life. But I would say like the romance is kind of lacking for me in it. But I really love this movie. And obviously it's good. It was nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah, no, I agree fully. Yeah, where I'm like, you know what, this movie is like a really unique, specific rom-com, which is really interesting. And I do think it adds, and I do think it does push forward the genre and was ahead of its time in many ways. Yeah. But is it giving me my warm bubble bath 50-50 rom-to-com split that I love? You know what? It's not. It's not giving me that. It's giving me other stuff, which I like. But I'm looking for my classic 50-50 paradigm. So it'll be a no for me as well.
Yeah. Well, with that settled, I think it's time for a reality check.
Yes.
In this segment, we test out the tropes and plot devices in the rom-coms we just watched and see if they hold up in the real world. In the rom-com, As Good As It Gets, Melvin is a true nightmare of a customer and drives Helen Hunt's character, Carol, up the wall. I don't know if we mentioned this, but yeah, Carol is a waitress at a restaurant that Melvin goes to a lot. And that's how they know each other. And she's just really lovely to him and nobody else puts up with him because he's a nightmare. And so I'm wondering, Mia, we have both been servers. Have you ever had a customer that was truly just testing your patience? And if so, did you then later fall in love with them?
You know what? It's a totally different.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. I mean, yeah, I've had so many customers test my patience. There was like three separate tables during a bottomless mimosa brunch that got hammered and then synced up as one giant table that I had to cut off. That was bad.
Oh my God.
That was just traumatizing. There was one that was like, it was similarly, I used to work bottomless mimosa brunch. Never again. I will never again do this. One of the brunches, we ran out of orange juice. And I think we're just doing like free champagne or something, or like, you know, free sparkling wine instead, bottle of sparkling wine. And then this guy was like so upset and just like was just like, and I, one of those restaurants that was very much like the management doesn't really get involved. It's like kind of on you. So I just like, he was just so mad and he just like wouldn't get over it and was just like being so rude about it. And I was just like, I know, I'm sorry. Like, look, it's not up to me. I apologize. Is there anything else to get you? He was like so mean and awful. And then by the end was like, somehow would like come around, was like apologizing, laughing, was like hysterically high-fiving me, like wanted to high-five me like so much, and then asked if we were hiring. Like, it was so weird.
That's so weird. People are so weird.
People are so weird. So it's like, just in terms of like, I did have an unruly customer. I guess by the end, they were sort of back in love with me.
Yeah,
and
they were almost your future coworker.
It was, yeah, he was like, this restaurant is horrible and how could you? And then by the end, he was just like, can I work here? And it was like, okay, I don't know what's happening here, but no.
He probably, you know, ended up enjoying that sparkling wine a lot more than he thought. And then he was like, everything's fine. Who needs orange juice? And really, who does need orange juice?
Who needs it? So that's the closest I've come. So not a full circle, but you know what? It's pretty good. Restaurants are pretty intense, passionate places. What about you, Allie?
Yeah. Well, it is interesting because the thing about restaurants is that your customers come in and they're hungry and you are literally at your worst when you're hungry. And so people can go from being like complete monsters and then like by dessert, they can turn around because they're, you know, satiated. But man, I just had this one table this one time. I worked on like a restaurant that was on a pier. And so most of my tables were outside and I was getting their drink orders and it was really sunny out and I, you know, wasn't wearing sunglasses and they're like, hey, they just decided to call me Squinty. And so
oh,
they're like,
no.
Hey, Squinty. We'll have two watermelon mimosas. And I was like, okay. And then just kept going on and on about it. And they're like, hey, you want to borrow my sunglasses, Squinty? And I was
oh my God.
But because you're like a waiter, you're in a position where you have to laugh at people's jokes because they're tipping you and you are serving them. And so you go, ha ha ha, you're so funny. And then he's like, and then it like the joke went kind of intense where he's like, please take my sunglasses. And I was like, sir, that's so kind of you, but I'm not allowed to wear sunglasses with my uniform. It's not part of our uniform. And he's like, let me talk to your manager about it. And it was just
oh my God.
But, you know, maybe he was doing it because he cared for me and my eye health and maybe
and was in love.
A little bit of romance there. Probably not because he was 60 and eating with his wife, but man, tested my patience that day.
Wow. Yeah. So it sounds like, oh, wait. Is there a part two? Oh my God.
And it's just a slow growl of like, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah. And I think what we're hitting on, is that the reason it is so shocking, like it's so surprising that they do end up together, why you are like, oh, this romance is going to happen, is because, yeah, this trope, it's like, does the reality check out? The first part does. The first part is, as a waitress, you can have horribly abusive customers and have to deal with it, which sucks. Do we fall in love with them?
No,
I don't think so in real life. But it's nice when it happens in the movies.
Yeah. Maybe if they gave me a bunch of money, I would be like, I'm in love with you. Maybe if that guy gave me a bunch of money, I would be like, okay.
Yeah. And that is that's not what happens in this film. So it does sort of sweeten the deal.
Yeah.
Well, that's the pod. Thank you all for listening. We have a new episode out every week. And remember to subscribe and rate. And we are brought to you by Campfire Media.
And P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Hi, I'm Michael McMillan. I'm 6'1", and I'm based in Los Angeles. Ever wonder what life is like for the working Hollywood actor? Every week on Slate Your Name, I sit down with actors, creators, and performers to find out how they're coping with the highs and lows of the entertainment industry. Hear Crazy Ex-Girlfriend's Rachel Bloom talk about struggling with auditioning.
I think they just weren't good auditions. The feedback from both was like, I was very green and not good.
How Tom Everett Scott booked That Thing You Do with Tom Hanks.
Here I am going to meet the guy who I basically am like modeling my whole career after. And I'm just like riddled with nerves. It's one of those moments where you're just like, oh, I'm gonna sabotage myself.
How Rutherford Falls' Janice Schmieding broke into the comedy world.
One way I was able to sort of do that is by sort of giving comedy this space in my life that was just a hobby.
And more. Join me every Tuesday for Slate Your Name from Campfire Media and available wherever you get your podcasts.
Campfire.